over the past 4 years, we've got used to sort of up and down behavior or responses from Trump administration on its global strategic policy. Now, we know that Trump administration generally has had steroidal highs and steroidal lows, and sometimes it sort of switches off. But in the last few weeks of its existence, we know that it's definitely on its way out. In fact, as we speak, in a week, there will not be a Trump administration in the US. But in these last few weeks, it looks like it's constantly on steroids. So it's really hyperactive and doing stuff. A lot of the stuff it's doing actually is simply meant to complicate life for Joe Biden, particularly in foreign policy areas. For example, declaring Cuba is state supporting terrorism. Now, Cuba, we know, is next door to America. Cuba is very important in American politics. There are a lot of Cuban immigrants in America. Florida was a state that Trump was expected to lose as per the polls, but he won it by a healthy margin because he played the Cuba card there, saying that a Democratic administration will be soft on Cuba. So he's done this on Cuba. Similarly, he has declared Houthis of Yemen to be terrorists. That will make it again tougher for Biden to make whatever changes he wants. But then he's also turning the screws on China, because that is also limiting Biden administration's freedom of action. Now, those are internal issues for America in a way from India's point of view. These are not internal issues for America if you live in the Middle East, but from India's point of view. So what we now have is that a mere tweet by National Security Council in Washington, as we know, it's a wing of the White House, works closely with the president. A tweet by them has caused a real buzz in diplomatic and strategic circles globally, but especially in Asia, both in Southeast Asia and in South Asia, and very definitely in India as well. Now, what is it that the tweet says? So this tweet did something unusual. I told you that Trump administration in its last few weeks is doing many unusual, unconventional things that you will not expect another US administration to do. But what they've done is they've declassified, and so early in its life, America's declassified documents 20 years later, 30 years later, 50 years later. But this is a document declassified within 2 years of its having been written. So National Security Council has declassified its framework for strategy in the Indo-Pacific. Very important for India, because India is very much a part of the Indo-Pacific, and the idea of Indo-Pacific is something that's come up between the leaders of India, Japan, Australia, and the US. And US is sort of the central pivot there in terms of being the strongest economic, military, and diplomatic power with many stakes in the region and many old allies in the region. Japan and Australia, for example, are old treaty-bound allies of the US, as is South Korea. India, to some extent, is a newcomer, and India is also a case by itself. It's sui generis because India is not a treaty-bound ally. It's a strategic ally, but not a treaty-bound security ally, does not have any security guarantees. Now, what does this framework say, and why has it caused such a buzz? Now, I will read a tweet by Robert O'Brien, who's the outgoing National Security Advisor, NSA, of the US. He says, "Declassification of the framework today demonstrates with transparency America's strategic commitment to the Indo-Pacific and our partners in the region. And then he goes on to say that this is the overarching strategic guidance for American policy. This goes back to the national security strategy that the Trump administration accepted from President Trump in 2017. And that strategy said that this region, this Asian region, is the most populous and most economically dynamic region in the world, and America has to increase its commitment to it. That 2017 National Security Strategy, NSS, document said that the most consequential challenge to the US and its allies is the growing rivalry between free and repressive regimes of the future. That means China and the rest. You can fill in the blanks if you need to. Then Feb 18, this framework was approved, which has now been declassified. It had the following strategic purposes, very briefly. Number one, to guide the US strategic approach to People's Republic of China. That is the first. I'm reading it in the sequence in which it appears. Second is the US strategic framework to prevent or fight back or to block Chinese economic aggression against the rest of the world, especially the nearby region. Number three, to prevent China's malign influence. These are the words in the framework document. China's malign influence on international organizations. And then it goes on to say that the framework has guided US whole of the government action to advance regional stability, including sovereignty, freedom of navigation and overflights, reciprocity of trade and investment, respect for individual rights and rule of law, and transparency. So once again, it is all directed against China, whether you like it or not. Maybe some allies of America might be a little taken aback by this. Maybe there'll be voices in India that will say, why are we being dragged into your fight with China? But this is what this document says. And the good thing is, it's now available to us. Now, this document also goes on to say, Beijing is increasingly pressuring Indo-Pacific nations to subordinate their freedoms and sovereignty to a common destiny envisioned by the Chinese Communist Party. So CCP, remember when Mike Pompeo came to India, even in the interview with me, he kept on referring to China as CCP, the Chinese government as CCP, not Chinese government, and also Xi Jinping as General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party. So they make that distinction between the party and the nation in this document as well. Then the document goes on to list the highlights of the US vision of this freedom and sovereignty. They say, number one, this is based on robust American leadership in the region. Number two, America has a long history of fighting back against oppressive regimes, so that should come handy. So America is again doing what it was doing, I presume they mean during the Cold War with communist states. Once again, it will get many people in India uncomfortable. Number three, that because US is the largest economic and strongest military power and a vibrant democracy, it's incumbent upon the US to lead from the front. So that is almost like saying this is America's burden, America's responsibility, America's destiny. Once again, you can argue with it, but I'm reading from the document, and it's a rare occurrence that within 2 years of such a document having been approved, it was a secret document, it has now been released with a few areas redacted or edited or blacked out that I will mention. I will not be able to tell you what's in those areas, but I will indicate some areas which have been redacted. Then it also lists America's end objectives for the various countries in the region. I will not list all the countries, that will take too long, but the ones that matter, essentially the Quad countries. It says Japan's number one, America has a commitment to Japan's free and open Indo-Pacific concept. Now, this is a concept that Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe had laid out in his speech in India, in New Delhi in 2007. I will quote from that a little later. The second thing that US is committed to is India's policy of security and growth for all region approach, which means everybody in the region should have security and growth. It should not be denied to anybody. Number three, it says that they are committed to Australia's Indo-Pacific concept. Number four, they say they are committed to South Korea's new southern policy. The north of South Korea is North Korea, as we know. South is the other way. South Korea's new southern policy. Fifth, they support Taiwan's new southbound policy. And sixth, they support ASEAN's outlook on the Pacific. And then the document goes on to say that, look, already France and Germany, this idea of Indo-Pacific is now resonating around the world. France and Germany have both come up with their own ideas and concepts of the Indo-Pacific. I told you that Trump took up that Indo-Pacific concept first from a Shinzo Abe lecture in India in 2007. In that lecture, Shinzo Abe had talked about a broader Asia spanning seas of freedom and prosperity, which will be open and transparent to all. That was a statement that Abe made in India 2007. That's when Manmohan Singh was Prime Minister of India, and India had started its look east policy, which the current government is now pushing with even greater vigor. So there is that continuity in Indian policy. We have to be happy about that. Then Abe again spoke in Nairobi in 2016, repeated some of the same arguments. Trump then in Vietnam, in Da Nang, he gave a speech in 2017. In that speech, he said, I mean, somebody wrote this speech for Trump. He has good speech writers. Does not look like words coming out of Trump's mouth. Definitely, you will not see words like this on his Twitter account, which has now been blocked. So his words, obviously speech writer's words, that this region is a beautiful constellation of nations, each its own bright star, satellites to none, and each one a people, a culture, a way of life, and a home. So this he said in Vietnam. Now there is much commentary on this. Surprisingly, a lot more commentary in international press than in the Indian media yet, because I am finding in the Indian media, until now, there is a degree of skepticism. Kya hai? We've heard this before. There is also an expression, banal, which a US-based strategic expert, who I respect very much and who I read all the time, Ankit Panda, he describes this document as banal, that this is something that a lot of people have been saying. So what is the big deal this time? So we'll tell you a little bit about supporting voices, about criticism, but basically critical commentary on this, and then I will come to some of the action points listed in this document and share with you screenshots from the document where you can also see which areas have been redacted. Of course, I will share links of the entire document and these commentaries with you and the tweets with you in the description today. Now, this is a 10-page document, not a big one. A 10-page document, and if I read a commentary by Anthony Galloway in Sydney Morning Herald, he says that this, you can see the objective is to deny China sustained air and sea dominance inside the first island chain. So look at the map of China, look at the map of the world around China, look at South China Sea, and you can see literally the first island chain around China. So China should not be able to have air and maritime dominance in those areas. That means America should come in its way, or America should provide the balance there. Then it goes on to say that even beyond this, in fact, if you want me to describe this first island chain, this will be the Japanese archipelago, Kuril Islands, Ryukyu Island, Taiwan, and also says that in case of a military conflict, America will be there to help Taiwan. Then it says, very important for us in India, quote-unquote, accelerate India's rise and capacity to serve as a net provider of security in the region. That means, instead of being a net seeker of security, ki aao mujhe bachao Cheen se ya kisi aur se ya terrorism se, India will be a net provider of security. And if India needs to build up to get to that level, then it's an American objective to help accelerate India's rise towards that direction. Also, then it goes on to say, and this is what Haraway also notes, the quadrilateral security should be enhanced with India, Japan, America, and the US. Now, there is something very interesting that you will find if you see my conversation with the outgoing US Ambassador Kenneth Jester. It was a very candid conversation, although he's a diplomat, he's very cautious, but you have to listen patiently and you can figure out what he's saying, and what he's saying is quite important. So for example, I asked him at a point that many of the Biden people had worked with India in the past, India and South Asia. So they know India, South Asia, India, China, the issues. So it will be easy for them to pick up the thread. That was my question. Maybe it wasn't such a good question or such a sharp question. His reply was, on the other hand, when the new team comes in and when they look at all the paperwork that's been left behind, all the new evidence that's been left behind, when all the new information is shared with them, then possibly they will not be picking up the thread from where they left it when they went out of power. My words now, because I'm expanding what he said. What he meant was that if they pick up they might pick up the thread now from where Trump administration left it. So because he says it, So read this framework document along with that. In fact, the same commentator who I am quoting from, the Australian commentator Anthony Galloway, also speculates on why this would have been declassified, not leaked, declassified at this time. And he says the possibility is that maybe the US officials who were working on this thought that if all the attention was taken away by Trump's madnesses and Trump's headline hunting and Trump's tweets, that they've also want people to know that they had done a lot of hard work and to build out a strategic policy. This is a way of leaving a fait accompli for the new administration, that they can't push back from it, or they can't pull back from it, or they, as Democrats are suspected all the time by the Republicans, they don't start pussyfooting, or they don't start nuancing it too much, in which case the real momentum will be lost. So we don't know what exactly is this, but again, if I go back to Galloway's commentary, he says that it does look like Trump administration has drawn a lot of lessons from Malcolm Turnbull's experience with China. Malcolm Turnbull was the Australian Prime Minister, also Liberal Party, as the current one, Scott Morrison, is, who started turning the screws on China. It was the NSA, National Security Advisor under him, John Garnott, who wrote a very significant report on Chinese intelligence and operations in Australia, which led to quite a bit of tension and quite a bit of concern. So he says that Scott Morrison, Malcolm Turnbull, both Australian, and Shinzo Abe and Narendra Modi, they also should get a lot of credit for helping this vision of Indo-Pacific or the Quad or the quadrilateral reach this stage. Now, we might look like, we might sound like we are digressing a little bit to Australia, but we've talked about Australia several times, and I said the last time, it's the nobody had thought that we'll have three or four episodes of Cut the Clutter in Australia when we are not even talking about cricket, because we never thought we had any issues with Australia or any strategic concerns either shared or contradictory with Australia. In this case, these are shared concerns. So a couple of things I will tell you about what's happened in Australia. The Australian government just a couple of days back has stopped a Chinese company, CSCEC, that is Chinese State Construction Engineering Company. They have prevented them, or they have banned them, from acquiring an Australian real estate company called ProBuild. Now, it's not such a big company. It's only 300 million Australian dollars. So it's not even a $1 billion company. It's a 300 million Australian dollar, which is it's a 300 million Australian dollar company. But even then, Australia has blocked the Chinese from acquiring this company on national security grounds. That is the important thing. That is the operative line, national security grounds. Now, when you go back a little bit, and that's the reason I said I'm digressing a little bit, but it's an important digression because it makes the strategic point to us. It underlines a tough strategic reality. About 5 years back, 4.5 years back, Australia had also prevented the Chinese, they had used executive power to stop the Chinese from buying their largest private land holding company. Now, this was a company, a legacy company, a family owned company, which owned a whole series of ranches in the Australian outback. So large that the size of this land under this company was more than the entire area, hold your breath, more than the entire area of South Korea. That will be almost three times the size of a country called Belgium. So China was acquiring that company, and with that company, all this land was coming in. They would have built ranches there, dairies there, whatever. But the Australians saw it as a strategic threat. You want to see how big this would have been? This would have accounted for 1% of all of Australia's land. Australia is a huge country, a continent-sized country. 1% of all of Australia's land, 2% of all of Australia's agricultural land. So who was the treasurer? Now, Australia has a peculiar system which I don't fully understand. Maybe when I do someday, I will explain to you. Australia has a position of treasurer, who in a way is above the finance minister. In fact, the finance minister is like the deputy treasurer. If the treasurer goes away, finance minister fills in his place. So treasurer at that point was Scott Morrison, who's now prime minister. And the treasurer had stopped that deal. thinking that this will be a strategic threat. And since it's a digression, I will tell you, it was around that time that Australians cutting across party lines, left and right, also welcomed an Indian company to buy a humongous coal mine system in Australia. And that company is one of the two most maligned these days. It is the Adani out of the Ambani-Adani twosome. So Adani then went and bought this big coal mine in Australia. There was a definite strategic imperative for Australia to reach out to India and to enable this deal. There was also a definite strategic imperative on the part of India to push this deal. So I know that there are many issues, and I know that I'll be abused for having said this, but I speak the facts. If there are facts to the contrary in terms of environmental issues, etc., etc., I have no view because I have no facts there. But I am telling you the strategic imperative of why this one Indian private company was allowed to make such a big investment and purchase in Australia, whereas the Chinese were prevented at that very time. So this problem with China did not begin just today. It's been going on, and sovereign countries in the region have been responding to it. This acquisition actually was to be made by a Chinese company, Dakang Australia Holdings, and an Australian listed company, Australian Rural Capital. So the government stopped it. Now, there's another piece from Australian Strategic Policy Institute from Rory Metcalf, who we quote from often. And he says that, look, first of all, a secret is out, and he says that it's reassuring to know that beneath President Donald Trump's unpredictability, conceit, and unilateralism, the policy professionals were striving to create a more cohesive agenda. So that is a relief. Then we have Ankit Panda, who is a critic of the document and who says this is nothing new. This is banal. This is the old hat about a liberal order being able to fight an illiberal, the rise of an illiberal power, namely China. And he says the best thing for India is that this shows that from Obama to Trump, India's interest in the US did not suffer as much of a jolt as might have been predicted with the transition, given disputes with Trump administration over trade, etc. Now, he also goes on to say that, you know, don't get so excited that this document says America's role is to promote India's rise, because the second Bush administration had also said that they have a stake in India's rise as a counterbalance to China. So what is the big deal? If anything, we know, he says, that Biden administration will also continue with the same policy. They will have no difference with this, but they will be more vocal on issues of concern to them and their constituency, that is issues of human rights, liberal values, and things like that. If you look at this document, it also lists some end state objectives. So what do we want in the end? What should the end state of these objectives be? Number one, that India should become a preferred partner on security issues with the United States. The two should cooperate to preserve maritime security and counter Chinese influence in South Asia and Southeast Asia. Funny thing is that you read the whole document. In fact, I'll have to carry out a search now to see if Pakistan features there. So to that extent, we should also de-hyphenate our minds from Pakistan now. And differently, our concerns, our threats, and our problems are also in a different league. Our problems are now China-sized, they are not Pakistan-sized. That is too small. Anyway, going ahead, the document says that end objectives also include that India maintain its capacity to counter border provocations by China. This is very important. And then yet again something that will have a buzz, I'm sure, in Islamabad. It says India's, that it's an American objective. It says that India remains preeminent in South Asia and takes the leadership role in maintaining Indian Ocean region security, increase engagement with Southeast Asia, and also grows its economy, defense capability, and diplomatic power to cooperate with US and other allies and partners. So once again, this is sort of putting in as many words the idea of India being a strategic partner. Then it lists some actions. It says, number one, very important, that give everybody US technical assistance. You know what that means, because, you know, diplomats talk in euphemisms. So technical is a euphemism for satellite intelligence, other intelligence, etc., etc., electronic intelligence. And it says that US and India should increase their defense cooperation and interoperability, because India is a major defense partner, MDP, and also says that diplomatically, militarily, and also in terms of intelligence, America should work with India, one, to enhance India's border security vis-a-vis the threat from the Chinese, and second, secure India's access to waters of the Brahmaputra. Remember, that river comes out of Tibet in China. So I think this is not something that I have read before, a clear American reference to waters of the Brahmaputra, because we know that we have concerns, and Brahmachalani has been writing about that. We have concerns about Chinese dam building on Brahmaputra system as it comes into India from the Tibet side. Now, interestingly, in conclusion, I will tell you, on China, it goes on to say that, number one, they should be denied sustained air sea dominance inside the first island chain that we spoke about a few minutes back. Second, protect Taiwan, and then domain, and America and American power and the Quad power should continue to dominate all the domains outside of the first island chain. So that is where it concludes. Now, I'm quite sure that if you are a policy wonk, if you are a strategic animal, if you are part of the strategic circuit, you've heard a lot of it before. But important thing in this case is that this has been, one, written out. Second, it's been released. It hasn't been leaked, it's been released. In fact, as you read the action points and you see the screenshots, I'm bringing them back, see the areas where passages have been redacted. So where it talks about India and US working together diplomatically, militarily, with intelligence cooperation to protect India's borders from China and India's water interests, the three lines after that have been redacted. So you can guess what these lines could have been. Then you see where they talk about also involving Maldives, Bangladesh, and Sri Lanka in this. That is very significant. You know, Pompeo had gone to Colombo and Maldives after visiting India, which was rare. And they are talking about bringing them into a new maritime security alliance in South Asia. Very interesting whether those countries agree or not, particularly Sri Lanka, I don't know, or Bangladesh. But these are mentioned there. And then again, the next two or three lines are redacted. So you can make your guess as to what those lines are. But I can tell you, whatever these are, those will be less banal. If the rest of the document is banal, which I don't think it is, then those lines will be less so.